Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the Six Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.
There's a spillage across half-back for Adelaide pit the ball up. Matt White now running down the wing of Etihad Stadium. He takes a bounce, takes a second bounce. Richmond might catch him. Here he's burnt off his opponent. Matt White takes a third bounce, runs inside the 50 from 49 metres out. He unloads, open goal square, goal!
Ebert pumps it into the forward 50. Wingard. Oh, Wingard! Oh, baby, there's your mark of the year. Get around him, boys. Oh, he's played on. Oh, he's kicked it anyway. Wingard, what a star.
Good Tuesday, footy fans. Welcome to the 6 points for another week. I'm Robert Beaver. And across the desk, a man who was close to being a late withdrawal for today's game due to general illness. My co-host, Sean Subra.
What's going on, Rob? Yeah, almost omitted from the show, but I'm here.
Just got a bit of the flu, did you?
Yeah. Bit of the man flu. It was extended on Friday night at the Freo game. I thought it was just nothing, but then...
Ended up paying the 90 bob for a ticket, did you?
As soon as that game was on, I knew that was it. Might have to call the show, but I'm here, Rob. Let's do it.
We'll call this the flu game, a la Michael Jordan. We'll see how you go. All right, a little bit of shameless promotion before we get started. If you want to be involved in the show, there are so many ways you can do it. One, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/the6points with a number. Tweet us on the Twitter machine at 6 points podcast or email us at 6pointspodcast@gmail.com. That is with an S-I-X. And of course, if you like the show, hit us up with a review on the iTunes store. Just search for 6 points, again with a number. Everything will come up from there. On today's show, lots to get through, Sean. What a massive week in footy it has been.
Big week.
We'll go through all of round 10, looking into next week's round 11, talk of the big freeze at the G, Jaddy's ACL, and the subsequent retirement that broke this morning. Razor Ray's hit on Young Kangaroo. So much more, but as always, we'll rewind you back to Friday night, Sean. The game you were at. You were on hand to witness the Freo versus Richmond clash.
Yeah, well, Rob, I secured my ticket for Friday night, and what a game it was supposed to be. Top of the table, Fremantle taking on a confident Tigers outfit on a Friday night. Fife! We're going to be talking about him the whole review. Fife got his first clearance within 6 seconds, followed by a massive specky on the win, which we've all seen this week. And we all thought that Fremantle were on and they were going to dominate this one, but... that was probably the only highlight for the quarter for Fremantle. Tigers dominated the opening term, kicking the first four goals and frustrating the home side. Now, things got worse for Fremantle as 200-gamer Michael Johnson was subbed off with a hamstring issue. It was a Tigers quarter, though, scoring a massive 8-3 and coming to Subiaco with some serious purpose. Came to play, Rob. Second quarter, perceived pressure from the Tigers were forcing Fremantle to make mistakes, including a very rare kicking error, which went straight to Ellis and gifted the Tigers another goal. We haven't seen this from Fremantle for a long time, but it's very rare you see it from this outfit.
For the first time this season, I thought Fremantle looked rattled.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Tigers, they were getting the ground ball. After almost every contest, when the ball hit the ground, there were about 3-4 Tigers just up and ready to go the ball. Fremantle were a mess. They were kind of all over the place. Half of them had fallen over. Half of them were caught up behind the play, just caught. Just unlike Freo. Fife, another sort of feature for Fife. These are my two features as a man going for Fremantle on that night for me. He had an absolute ripper from the boundary, a two-step banana, which went through for a goal. And, finally, the home crowd had something to cheer about. That was the first time.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot. I think that was only their second goal, maybe, for the game at that point. So,
even on the first goal, it was more of a frustrated, come on, than a
celebration. A bronze cheer, almost,
Fremantle, they just didn't have the legs to match the Tigers' intensity. And at the end of the second... it felt like they were just waiting for the half to come over. They weren't playing. They were just saying, look, let's just wait for the half and let's just try again in the third. Fremantle, they just had to make up ground in the third quarter and they just had to try and give themselves a chance in the fourth. I said if they could kick four in this quarter, then they were a chance. They got three. So it was close. They still were kind of in it. They were doing a lot better in the third, but all of their goals that they scored, it required such a big build-up. compared to Richmond, who were kind of just running it in. Richmond were having pings from everywhere. I mean, not taking anything away from Richmond. They, Dustin Martin, Ellis, they were pinging it from everywhere, and it was going through. They didn't have much points. And Fremantle, they were scoring goals back, but it was like a 5-minute sort of build-up for Fremantle's goal. Then Richmond would go down the other end, ping it through from outside 50, clear it back into the centre. Final quarter, Fremantle, they're well and truly in it at the start of the fourth, and they were still mustering up replies to the Tigers. Edwards broke from Richmond, he broke the quarter through, though, with a desperation slide tackle goal to put it through. Towards the last sort of 5 minutes, Walters had a terrific snapper goal. That got them within three, and there was still plenty of time, but it was a late Tigers surge. It was just too much for Fremantle. Running home with the game, Richmond. Final score from Domain, Fremantle 10-10-70 to Richmond 15-7-97. Now, if you look at that scoreline, not too bad. 27 points.
It's not horrendous. I mean, there's only two difference in the scoring shots there, so you're not...
Yeah.
You'd look at that and think that they weren't necessarily comprehensively outplayed, but if you actually watch the game, it tells a little bit of a different story, doesn't it?
Without a doubt. That first quarter, Richmond were seriously incredible. And it's... I mean, it's something that the home fans hadn't seen in a while. It was a bit... Yeah. They've seen it, but they've seen Fremantle doing it to other teams. So it was a bit surreal. There was a surreal atmosphere around the ground. I don't think much people knew what to do. I mean, the way that I and the people I went with kind of saw it was it's happened in the first quarter. It's Fremantle. They're going to come back. So it wasn't too... They weren't too angry about it, but it was sort of like, whoa, is this actually happening kind of thing? Like, yeah, they just got eight goals.
I think that was the general consensus around the ground. There was a real sense of belief that they would come back. In fact, you know, they're Fremantle. You know, they're 9-0. They're the best team in the league at this season. Mm. So... look, and unfortunately that wasn't quite the case in the end. Richmond, I think, did a really similar thing to what they did last week at Dreamtime. Of course, I was there for that one. And
I just slipped that in.
Humble brag, yeah. and what they did is I thought Essendon looked really, really slow against Richmond, but I think watching this game, it reminded me of that, and I think it became more of a... That's what Richmond's actually doing to Fremantle. Fremantle's so used to defending this fast-paced handball, run-and-gun play on all costs, and that's the style that most teams play. Richmond were really deliberate. They were very patient. They were pinpointing targets. And it's almost like, especially in transition, the Fremantle Dockers were used to just running to where the ball landed and clearing it. And when the ball was yet to be in there, players were in the back line going, where do I go? There's no football to run to. And they almost seemed confused. And I know it seems really stupid to be like, they had too much time, but I think that was really what happened in that first quarter. Look, and Richmond got, I don't know, was it 6, 7, 8 goals or something in the first quarter?
Eight goals in
the first quarter. And they were all quick, hard transition. There wasn't a lot of sort of hit and mark inside 50. It was all from general play. And yeah, Fremantle just looked really, really confused for this one, Sean.
Yeah, look, so just on Fremantle, we'll talk about Fremantle first before we get to how good the Tigers were. Now, I mean, they're... We saw a bit of fatigue, I think, from last Saturday night. Yep. Last Saturday night was a massive game. They flew Adelaide to Perth. Big flight. I mean, they still had a week sort of in the gap, but that the energy that they sort of brought on Saturday night would have sort of fatigued them this week. Now, how do you think that Fremantle acted in... They've never really been in this situation this year, being eight goals down. How do you think that they reacted? They did come back.
I think there's two things here, and it's one that... Richmond controlled the pace of the game and they did that really, really well. And then once they had established that lead, essentially the game was theirs. All they had to do was hold on to it, which obviously they did in the end. But Fremantle, I thought, tried, but it was very uncharacteristic of Fremantle. It was almost like they didn't know how to play from behind, or at least play from behind for that much. You know, they didn't know how to play that catch-up football. They were trying. I will say 100% they were trying. I think the effort was there from Fremantle. And honestly, I think the longer the game went on, the more it looked like they could come back. But that eight-goal deficit was...
You just killed it at the start. It was too much.
If that had been maybe a 6-goal-2 quarter, maybe it was only 4 goals.
Yeah.
You know,
they would have had a chance,
According to the score, that would have been a 3-point difference at the end. I think the longer the game went, Fremantle worked their way into it slowly as Richmond fatigued. But unfortunately, you know, you can't go around giving up 8-goal quarters, especially to a team that's up and about like the Tigers.
Yeah, definitely not. The Tigers, their perceived pressure was a thing. So what was happening was Fremantle, after about the, I think there was three really quick ones in a row, then there was a kind of gap in Fremantle. I thought, oh God, like this is happening.
Yeah.
And then the kicks and stuff, they were just going on top of the head. They were going over players. Pavlich, I think, for the game, I'm just making up stats here, but he felt like he dropped about 20 marks.
I think he even got a bronze cheer at one point from the fans. And
yeah.
I was a little bit upset about that. But look, and yeah, there was a lot of key players that went missing. I mean, even Michael Walters didn't do a hell of a lot on the night. Ballantyne as well. Like these players that really sort of give the spark to the crowd to get the crowd into the game. They didn't
bring it up, yeah.
Fantastic games.
Michael Walters did have a couple.
He had a couple of moments,
but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Ballantyne, quiet. He as well, he kicked a big goal. But yeah, it wasn't enough. They didn't have that sort of Eddie Betts spark around the ground, which you'd need to win your teams in that kind of...
Yeah, you Eddie Betts spark.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely.
So what does this mean for the Tigers then? How are they going? Oh, how's their season going?
Look, they've turned it around beautifully. I think... top of my head, 1-4, 2-4 maybe starts. They weren't looking good after about 5 or 6 weeks, but last 3 weeks they've really turned around, and it has coincided with this different sort of style in play. They've stopped trying to be this run-and-gun team, and I think they have to, because their strength, obviously, as we're seeing now, lies in a more deliberate approach to their football, kick, mark, and sort of doing that. And as we saw, teams don't really know how to defend that. I mean... You do simulations at training, because in the final 5 minutes of a quarter, teams start icing the clock. But, I mean, Fremantle were completely stunned. They were like, why isn't the ball coming in here? It was almost like Fremantle had the adrenaline, and then when the Tigers stopped pushing, it went away. So, I mean, look, they're purring along quite nicely at the moment.
They're eighth on the ladder now, yeah. So... They'd be looking to lock that in. They know they can get into the finals. I mean, we saw it last year. They had that massive run. So they're just going to be, Damien Hardwish is going to be putting that down the throat to say, look, last year we did it and we only played half of the season. This year, we're in this position now.
At the moment, if they continue this form, they will play three quarters of a season.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, if they got eighth last year. And the thing to notice as well, they got eliminated by playing Port Adelaide in the elimination final in Adelaide last year.
Yeah.
And they've already beaten them in Adelaide this year. And I know Port Adelaide is a little bit of a different team this year. But you'd think that would just give the Tigers monumental belief going forward. But let us know what you think. Hashtag 6 points podcast on Twitter. Let us know what you think. Sean, wrap this one up for us.
Yeah, just one last question before we wrap it up. Rance. I want to talk about Rance for one second. Now, we know there's been a lot of rumours that he might be leaving AFL, might be leaving to another club. How big is he in this team? He had a pretty good game.
He's massive. He's probably the most informed defender in the league this season. I know Eric McKenzie from the Eagles was All-Australian. He's gone down. Rance is just the type of player who...
You want him in your team.
absolutely. He's tall enough to play on anyone he needs to, but he's mobile enough to play on everyone that you need him to play on, you know, and he has an advantage in most contests because he's so lanky. He's got a huge wingspan. He's so tall and he's confident. His dash
confident.
Off the back line is definitely something to be admired, and it's something the Richmond need if they're going to keep winning games this season.
Yeah, good. And just finally, Fife's... What was better? Fife's marker is gold, in your opinion.
I'm going to say his mark only because in my very non-elite football career, I've kicked a goal like that, but I've never taken a mark like that. So I'm going to say Fife's mark was better.
Okay, some goals to wrap this one up for you. Walters finished with 3, Crozier with 2, Tabiner, Ballers and Fife with 1. For Richmond, Vicky had a big outing with 3, Griffiths with 2, Delidio, Revolt with 2, Martin, Greek and Morris all with 1.
Hero of the Week.
Yes, it is now time, of course, for Hero of the Week. Sean, take us through someone in the AFL family who stood out for all the right reasons in your eyes this week.
Yeah, look, I had a bit of trouble with Hero this week.
My
villain came straight to me, like Saturday morning. But
you did. Sean, actually, I had to prompt Sean for the Hero this morning, and he said, oh, I'm still stuck, don't have it. But who have you come up with? Who stood out in your eyes this round?
My Hero this week is Big Mummy from GWS, of course, Shane Mumford. Now, he had a monster game last weekend to top off a monster season for him so far. Just a couple of stats for this round. He had 15 possessions, 10 of those were contested, 51 hit-outs and 8 tackles as he battled Stephen Martin, who I think is a big ruckman in the AFL at the moment, including a nasty bump on him, which always sent him back through the inflatable line. Rob, it was massive, and Steph didn't really know where he was. But look, his hard tackles and courageous second efforts continue to inspire Greater Western Sydney. And you would think he would be first or second in line for the All-Australian ruck position.
Yeah, behind Sandilands at the moment, I think, because just face it, no one can beat Sandilands. But yeah, I think probably him and Sauce Jacobs are probably tied for that second spot at the moment.
Yeah, I really admire him. Like, although he's a great player, just as a person, he wasn't afraid to step up to the Swans when they were thinking about recruiting Buddy and sort of dumping him. Took a risk, and he's obviously been rewarded. Been rewarded very good. Now he's one of the best informed ruckmen in the competition. Probably wasn't that. And he was good in Sydney, but he was sort of always sheltered behind the Mike Pike thing.
Yep.
But now look at him this year. Like, I really don't know if Sydney knows what they've lost. And to be perfectly honest with you, Rob, I'd rather Mumford in my team any day than Mike Pike and Kurt Tippett, like with Kurt Tippett kicking the way he's kicking.
I mean, Kurt Tippett at the moment is essentially being an $800,000 paperweight. He's not doing a hell of a lot, is he?
Nothing. And Mike Pike's okay, but I mean...
He'll get a game every week. He does his job, but he's nothing spectacular. Yeah, he doesn't offer a hell of a lot else around the ground, does he?
Yeah, no. So Mummy, keep up the outstanding work. You, sir, are my hero of the week.
Yeah, good call, Sean. I'm glad you actually found something there, because otherwise this is going to be a pretty bad segment. But my hero this week, I've just gone straight up simple, the footy public. Yes, yep. It isn't often that we get a genuine feel-good story in the AFL world, but this week has been one of them. Queen's birthday footy yesterday at the MCG, of course, Sean, and the big freeze at the
big
G
freeze.
To raise money for motor neuron disease, of course. Neil Danaher, the face of this, of course, being diagnosed with the disease. Now, over $2.2 million was raised for this wonderful cause, and just something we should really be highlighting. As I said, there's not often that there's great sort of feel-good stories, and I mean, not everyone's a winner in this case. Obviously, Neil Danaher will eventually succumb to this disease, but for him to be there, you could see him having a laugh as all the celebrities and the media personalities went down the slide into the negative 2-degree water at the bottom. Sam Newman in the mankini, BT in the jumpsuit. It's just a great thing to be a part of. And there was also the blue beanies spotted around the MCG, and a face of support as well. Look, beyond that as well, Melbourne, they showed up for the game, which is great. Obviously, Danaher used to coach them. Look, they really provided a contest. I know they let go at the end, but still, yesterday was a wonderful day, a great occasion, and it was great to hear that people got behind the cause and raised such a great amount of funds for the motor neuron disease. Footy public, you are my hero of the week.
Yeah, great call, Rob. We need more of this. Like, it's a great cause. They're Everyone just, got around it.
There's not enough genuine feel-good stories, and I mean, it shows just how generous footy fans on the whole are. And when you're an icon of that game, as Neil Danaher is, and obviously he's become the face of motor neuron disease in Australia, but you know, a serious issue that people tackled in a lighthearted way, and obviously it had the intended result to raise the funds. So well done.
Great. Good work, guys. We're going to move on now to our second feature game of the round, which was, of course, Carlton v Adelaide. Rob, take it away.
$32,000 at the MCG to see Eddie Betts take on his former team. So not a bad turnout overall, seeing as Carlton are, let's be honest, a complete mess this season, and the Crows have been indifferent at times this year. Also, the only time the Crows graced the MCG this year, Sean, so you know if they have ambitions to play come September, it was crucial that they take the 4 points back to South Australia, especially against a team like Carlton. Now, to start this one off, look, Carlton, they look daring early, especially. They were trying to play on, attack at all costs. They were also hard at the contest, giving the fans something to cheer about, something that the Carlton fans haven't had for years on end. Cripps got them on the board with a major after 3 minutes, and it looked like Carlton had come to play. Now, Cade Simpson tearing it up across halfback as the loose man. Thought Phil Walsh would react to that, but he hadn't, as Adelaide kicked their first off quick transition. All of Adelaide's first three goals actually came while Simpson was on the bench, of all things. I know we'll get to that later, Sean, in your villain segment. 6 minutes to go, disaster struck as Dangerfield and Judd contested a mark on the wing with the latter marking, but going down and immediately calling to the trainers for assistance. He looked in extreme pain, grimacing constantly as he left the field. Strange that he tried to get off with the trainer's assistance before they called for the stretcher, though.
Odd one.
Look, a standing ovation by both sets of fans as he was driven off by the mobile stretcher. So
it was great to see. He went off on the Crows side. That was real the Crows sport as well. And all of them were standing on.
It was fantastic.
They know Chris Judd.
Exactly. Now, post-Judd injury, three goals to one Adelaide's way, Look, you just hope Carlton's positive start, they could refine that confidence and continue to make this a game. Quarter number two. I don't have any Benny Hill music, but here we go. Bizarre passage of play about halfway through the second. Turnover on Carlton's defensive 50. Betts had an opportunity to go. Decided instead to do the team thing. Handballed it to Cameron in the square. Cameron fumbled the ball. Carlton came and closed it off by diving on the ball and rushing the ball over the line. However, the goal umpire never signalled a behind. The field umpire never signalled anything. Play on! Dangerfield comes in the tackle. Andrew Walker, who effectively throws it over the line. Walker then blasts the umpire. The irony being, upon replay, the ball never fully crossed the line, and this was, in fact, the correct call, Sean. Carlton fans, irate.
They were.
probably the most exciting patch of play for the quarter was when a herd of blues. I don't know what the connective noun for a blue is. A herd of blues.
A hovercraft of blues.
Running off halfback, shared the ball, run and carry, shepherding into the wing. A scramble kick forward by Dylan Buckley found Gasbolt on the bounce. He runs inside the 50, lines them up out on the full. Still nice to see flashes of exciting play from Carlton, though. We haven't seen this for a while. And the third Benny Hill skit of the quarter. Lockie Henderson had a chance to score, running inside 50 with a bounce, drawing a man, gave the handball over the top to Levi Casbolt, who sort of staggered and seemed unsure, despite only being 11 metres out. Decides to go the snap, ball smothered by the Adelaide defender. Just a comedy of errors in the second quarter, Sean, but it made for great viewing.
Very great viewing. That was the second quarter, wasn't it?
That was just the second quarter. I'm out of breath already, but that was only the second. Quarter number three, Zach Tui with a barrel out of the defensive goal square. Not a bad effort from the Irish, Sean. Fell about 10 metres short of the centre circle, so not a bad effort at all. Matty Cruiser, first game back from 18 months out, and the former number one draft pick. Look, a contested mark and a goal, and the crowd erupted. Great to hear the crew from the crowd during this one, Sean. The Benny Hill music was needed in this game, as Tom Bell had three chances in the quarter to kick a goal. Ran underneath the ball, so didn't get the mark. And then twice the ball was smothered. So
twice
just
in a row. It's crazy.
It's fantastic. Just a four-point lead for the Crows at three-quarter time. Quarter number four, Levi Casbolt from 50 put the Blues ahead for the first time since the first quarter with a bomb, and the crowd erupted, Sean. Great to see the Carlton fans finding voice. Eddie Betts, quick reply though, kicks his first of the day with 10 minutes to go to put the Crows up by 8. 2.5 minutes to go in transition footy sees Jenkins run into an open goal, and that sealed it for the Crows. Now, all up, probably the most enjoyable game of footy I've watched this season, Sean. Carlton full of energy, the crowd involved, Crows answering every push, fast pace, lots of skill errors and mistakes, but really just an enjoyable spectacle of AFL football. Final score in this one, Carlton 14-6-90, Adelaide 14-15-99.
Yeah, look, Carlton came to play, didn't they? It was a good game.
It was a great game.
Their intensity was just up and about. It was really good. And the crowd, I was so surprised when I was watching the replay of this, and I heard the crowd come in after a couple of goals. I was like, where are they playing? I thought they must be in Adelaide Oval, say, because it was so loud, and it's something that we don't usually hear that much, especially from Carlton, but because the MCG is such a big venue.
Yeah,
and
generally all the sound just goes up. It's not like Eddie had where it kind of echoes around
stays
in the ground.
So it was really unusual, but yeah, they were loud. They were up and about. Crows fans, there was a lot of Crows fans there as well. They were loud. It was like a prelim kind of atmosphere. But
It was only 32,000. Imagine, you know, if people had known Carlton would have shown up, there would have been 50,000 there, so... look, but yeah, honestly, I think probably the best game from an purely entertainment standpoint that we've had all season. Now, a couple of notes from this one. Last week, we saw an improved effort from Carlton against Sydney, despite the big loss. And I think John Barker only had 2 or 3 days at that point to sort of take over that team in preparation for this. This week, we saw them trying to take the game on and looking mentally involved in the contest, a lot more energy. Are Carlton finally going in the right direction, Sean?
Look, I think that this has mixed it up for him, the new coach. I think it's good. You do see this when you have the new coach. I mean, last week, what did he have? He had 2 days to do something.
Yeah, it was a Friday night game, so we would have had 2 or 3 days.
So he's had this whole week now. I mean, you can't do much. He's not a miracle worker, but he would have just changed up a few things. It would have been like, look, let's just try this, let's just do this, like new coach kind of thing. So there was definitely a lift of intensity. There was just a want to be there, a want to fight, a want to win.
Yeah, I think the word that comes to mind is energy.
Yeah,
they just looked like they were mentally engaged in the contest and they wanted to be a part of that contest. And this happens with every sort of coach. You get a new voice and. I mean, I don't know exactly what he said to the group, but I imagine it would have been something along the lines of, let's face it, the season's gone. They're not going to do anything this season. So it would have been, you're playing for your careers, essentially. Like, you know, if you don't perform, we're going forward without you. So that gives players motivation. I think he would have just said, be daring, play on, you know, try and make things happen. Be confident, instill that confidence in this team. And also some personnel changes. I noticed Liam Jones wasn't playing. And I mean, the Bulldogs got rid of him and I had no problem with that because he gave Carlton nothing in the games that he played. So all of a sudden, some personnel changes. The forward line looks to be operating a little bit better. I mean, we laugh at Tom Bell's achievements, Lockie Henderson and Levi Casbolt.
But the ball's getting in there.
But the ball's getting in there and they've got targets. And for the first time, Carlton looked like a football team this year. So it's great news for them.
Great news. I thought best on ground for me, I thought from Carlton was, what's his face, the ruckman. I've just forgotten his name.
Cruiser,
yeah. He was sensational. And I mean, to have, he had 18, what do you have, 18 months off, to come back in being the second ruckman, and then your first ruckman, he was out for quite a long time, and then to be stepped up to the number one role after 18 months, he performed sensational. He kicked goals, he was getting tap outs.
I think he did two goals. I don't, he didn't have a lot of the ball, but I thought his impact on the game, just because the fans, he was really igniting those fans. I remember
every time he got the ball
in the fourth quarter, he was running back with the flight of the ball into the Adelaide 50, punched the ball over the line, like those acts, little things. And he was also around the contest, he was on his knees trying to get the ball out. He bought energy, and I think that was something really big for Carlton as well. Now we can't glisten over this. Chris Judd, look, now confirmed rupture of the ACL has been announced. The question that I had written down was, does he play again? But however, as we know, this morning, the press conference was announced. Judd has confirmed that he will, in fact, retire. Now, I don't think it's overstating his impact on the game to say he's probably the best player of the last decade.
Yeah,
100%. Look, favourite Chris Judd memory. Do you have one? Can you think of anything off the top of your head, or is it just something that he does generally?
Well, look, I'm going to hit you with some stats, Rob.
Hit me with some stats, yeah.
I've got a list here. So, Juddy, he was pick 3 2001 National Draft. He's played 279 games. One-time Premiership player, one-time Norm Smith medalist, two Brownlow medals, two AFL Players Association MVPs, six times All-Australian, two times West Coast Best and Fairest, three times Carlton Best and Fairest, three times Ross Glendening Medal, one time Victorian Representative, two times International Rules Representative Captain. He was a West Coast captain, and of course, he was a Carlton captain as well. Just stellar.
It's an amazing career, and also worth noting that he's, I think, one of four players in VFL AFL history to win the Norm Smith in a losing side. In 2005, of course, when he went down to Swan. So
just unbelievable. And a bit of breaking news as well for you, Rob. This is thanks to sportsbet.com. Breaking news, 400 workers laid off as sports tape manufacturers following the news of Chris Judd's retirement. So devastating news for them, Matt.
he always had a lot of issues with his shoulders, and I think that was why he was taking pick three in the first place. There were a few concerns over his shoulders, but what a great career.
Anyone who could play that good and not actually put their hands up in the air fully has to be a good player.
He was an amazing player, and I think a lot of, you know, in the last couple of years he's had his form slumps and things, but when everything's said and done and it's starting to get to that point now, you'll go back, you'll look at this guy's highlights, and you'll remember things that he did at the Eagles that even by today's standards you're looking at and going, oh my god, how did he get out of that pack? Or, you know, his acceleration, that first sort of 2 to 3 meters is just absolutely blinding, and people couldn't catch him and people couldn't hold on to him. And yeah, look, an absolute stellar career.
And I think this kind of sums up how much of an impact he was to the AFL. When he did go down on Saturday, and there was all this kind of news like, will he retire and all this, there was a West Coast supporters page on Facebook. Now, not the actual West Coast page, a supporters page. So this is the diehards. This is the one-eyeds, the diehards kind of thing. And they posted a picture of Chris Judd, and they said, if this is the end, we just want to thank you on behalf of the West Coast Eagles. You've done a sensational job to our club. Thank you for your just being in our club and what you've done here. So that's so much respect, I think, and that kind of sums up what he's done for the AFL.
He's an amazing person, and he had a lot of sort of media commitments off the field, even dating back to his days at West Coast. And I think that there's two things that I really want to mention, and I mentioned these in the blog. If you haven't already gone and seen it, jump onto Facebook. You can find the link there. But he once wrote an article when he was during his time at the West Coast Eagles saying that athletes and sportsmen should not be role models. But despite writing that and despite that being his belief, he really has been the ultimate role model, especially during a time in West Coast where Ben Cousins was front page news for the better part of year, and there was all those
rumors.
The whole
team was front page news,
wasn't it? You know, exactly. There's an inverted commas drug culture, and you can argue bits and pieces or whatever you want to do. But he did remarkably well to keep his life private.
Mm.
And despite writing an article saying we shouldn't be role models, he's the ultimate role model because of what he did. And look, nothing for me sums up Chris Judd more than the image of him breaking from a pack and just punishing the opposite team. So, Juddy, you will be sorely missed from everybody at the 6 Points crew, including Brianna, who is usually very one-eyed as a Melbourne supporter. But even she said it's a sad day. So the Juddenaut, we wish you the very best in whatever you choose to do post-AFL. Now, Sham, last point for this one, lower abdomen. Yeah, two Crows players suffering hits to the Sherrins in this one, Sean. Dangerfield in the first, Cheney in the second. Nothing to ask you, just thought it was noteworthy. Goals for this one, Carlton, Casbolt kick three, Armfield and Cruiser with two. And for Adelaide, Jenkins booted five in the end. I think three of them came in the last quarter. I didn't really think he had that much of an impact on the game. And then Lynch and Betts both with one.
Villain of the week.
Yeah, we've gone through two games from the weekend. We've done our hero of the week. It is now time to flip the table. Sean, who's your villain this week? Who are you taking aim at? You've been sick, so have you lightened up a bit? That's my first question.
No, my villain's an easy one. My villain comes to me straight away. My hero is the one
that you struggle with.
Tough conditions, my villain this week is John Barker. Now,
how?
Who is John Barker, you ask? He is Carlton's interim coach who replaced Mick Malthouse last week. Yeah, exactly how. Now, first of all, congratulations to him. Great work to get the head job at Blues, first of all. And on Saturday, as Rob just said, Blues were on top. And they played really well. They lifted their intensity, as we just talked about. So good job to John Barker. But this is a little bit different. Now, Blues were on top for the first 5 minutes. They scored three goals zip. 5 minutes, three goals zip. Crows had all the ball, though. They were pumping it into the forward 50, but they were just unable to score. So, and it was all thanks to one man. It was Cade Simpson. He was running it off half forward with class and had a massive 9 possessions in 5 minutes. Just amazing start to the game.
He was chopping, let's be honest. He was chopping.
Now, he came off to have a chat with the coach on the phone. Now, all good. You know, Barker probably just wanted to tell him some orders or say, good job, you fixed like the back line, something like that.
You've saved my bacon. Yeah. You know, I'm probably going to get the job because you're playing so well. Yeah.
Thank you, Cade. But then after this, there was another interchange available for Cade, and he wasn't able to get back onto the ground for 5 minutes. 5 minutes, Rob!
Yeah, it's too long, isn't it?
Now, so Carlton have its best 5 minutes in 2015.
Or probably 18 months, you know, probably more than this season.
More than 2015. and then their best player goes off for 5 minutes. Now, what happened in that 5 minutes, you ask? Not much. Crows just scored 3-1 and got the lead back in the 5 minutes that Cade was off. Now, when Cade came back on, all that hard work he did was undone. Now, it's like he went off in one world and came on a different planet. He's like, what is this? Am I an Etihad? Yeah. What's happened here?
15 minutes ago, I was on top of the world. And,
and then he comes out to this. Silly, silly, silly mistakes. And it shouldn't happen, John Barker. You brought good intensity to Carlton on Saturday. But this is just a simple thing. Get it right. You are my villain of the week.
Yeah. One of the most bizarre sort of things we've seen, because not only do a lot of the good players spend, you know, 80% of the game on the ground, so everyone comes off for a two-minute spell every quarter or whatever, but with the amount of rotations that happen, how could this man be left on the bench for 5 minutes? And beyond that, I think the way that he actually got back on, I actually think there was a ball sort of around the interchange area on the wing.
Yeah.
Cameron Wood, the ruckman, was on the ground, and Cade yelled at him and said, Get off the field. Come over here. So they traded a ruckman for a running halfback just because they needed Cade in that back line. So, I mean,
I would just pick a bad player. It's the easiest team to find a bad player in. You've got Carlton.
Well,
it's not like you played all the money.
I don't think it is anymore. And we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, which was most of these guys could be getting games at other clubs. Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you that at a certain point you just say, get anybody, off.
Yeah. Get
but,
him back
I mean,
on.
He spoke on the phone, and I'm guessing the message, like you said, would have just been like, doing a sensational job, just keep organising that back line and keep going through the corridor, or something to that effect. Mm. 5 minutes later, the game's out of hand. No, and it's not unreasonable to think they only went down by 9 points in this one. It's not unreasonable to think that if he wasn't off for 3 of those minutes, that they might have actually cracked this one. So,
well, that the Crows got their first goal there. That's what started the Crows up. They probably might not have got the first goal. You know, anything could happen, but it was silly.
It was silly. And look, the Judd injury had part of it to do. I think Carlton lost a lot of their inspiration, I guess?
Yeah.
You know, they seemed a bit down, especially of Judd's caliber doing that. But look, absolutely a fantastic call for you, Sean. Now, my villain this week is the umpire who leveled North Melbourne rookie Trent Dumont. Yes, Dumont should have had more awareness, but the umpire was facing him and could have and should have easily avoided the contact. Razor Ray Chamberlain, you are charged with probably the most aggressive bump we've seen this season, Sean. Look, high contact, off the ball. I designate it as medium impact.
Yep.
I reckon 1 week with a guilty play and a good record for Razor.
I'd take him off this week.
I'd take him off this week. Look, such an incident, we're having a bit of a joke, but such an incident would actually result in fines at the very least and probably suspensions for a player. But because it's an umpire, everyone just has a good laugh.
They're fine.
They can do whatever they want. Look, I think that's a bit of a double standard. And I don't think you should... Like, it's a fine thing. Like, do you fine the umpire for making contact with a player? Like, I think in this case, like, he's fair dinkum leveled him with
He's copped him good.
I mean, he was on his haunches for a while, Dumont, so...
And when Minson's getting 4 weeks for a little tap on the back.
Minson's getting 4 weeks for tapping the back, and that was thrown out of the appeals tribunal, but... Like, how can Vincent get 4 weeks and there's a blanket rule, which is if you touch an umpire, you get suspended.
He's just got in.
And then
little Razor.
And then Razor Ray Chamberlain comes in and just flattens this kid. And we're all sitting here having a laugh about it. I mean...
Oh, it is funny.
I don't think he gets fine. I think, like, an actual public... A statement from Ray saying, look, I'm really sorry, I should have been paying more attention.
I think Dumont should have the opportunity to give one back to him.
Oh, yeah? Right of reply?
Yeah. Bloody stand still, Ray. Here it comes.
look, we've had a good laugh about this, but Ray Chamberlain, you are my villain of the week. I think the only consolation is that we didn't have another Sharon's incident with this one. I mean, it could have been a lot worse, but...
If it was a triple Sharon, that would be the villain.
Fair enough. All right. Two games, hero and villain down. One more game to go. That is the Port Adelaide versus Western Bulldogs at the game that Sean chose for this week. Saturday night game?
Saturday night.
In Adelaide, Sean, so run us through how this one played out for you.
Dogs, they were up and about early, they were getting all the ball early. For no reward, though, they missed their first 4 shots of the game. Port soon broke their spirits with 2 goals straight after all the Dogs' good work came undone. Youngster Bailey Dale, he came through with an opportunistic effort, mind you, off the ground to get one back from the Doggies. Yeah, nice soccer.
It was like soccer. It was 35 metres out, and I thought he should have picked it up.
Outside the square.
You know, in the APL, that would have been a highlight play.
In the
AFL, it's just average.
good clash in the centre between Lobster and Minson. It was an even contest, but it was very entertaining for the crowd. Thought Minson's been pretty good coming back in.
I think it's no surprise that Minson went out for 3 weeks and we dropped 3 games. I think Ace Cordy gave us nothing in the ruck, and now that he's back, you can see around the contest we're a bit bigger and more confident, I think.
Look, I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. We talked about how it was a tactical move and how you may as well do a smaller ruckman up because he's the future kind of thing. But I think the Dogs need that. I think they need it for just everything, for the fans, for the AFL respect,
also to give the younger players that are coming through confidence that they can actually win games because, as we've seen, there's no Minson, there's no glory.
Exactly. The Dogs got 3 in a row late to get the margin back within reach, though. Now, your friend, Goal Sneak, little Jakey Stringer, he got a beautiful snap to give the Dogs a lead. Now, before this, Rob, Sam Gray got the ball on the angle and just outside the goals. he had about a second before he was going to get pile driven by Matty Boyd, and just cleverly put it on the outside of the boot and popped it through for a goal. Great footy mind from the youngster. Yeah. Just to, I mean, most 9 out of 10 players would have just got cleaned up by Boyd.
I distinctly remember this. I watched this game last night in preparation, and I remember seeing this, and I was like, oh my God, this kid is going to get killed.
Yeah.
I thought Matt Boyd was going to come in on the angle, pile drive him into the ground, which he did, and I thought he was going to try and ram him into the point post, but... Absolutely, great presence of mind and awareness to just. I don't even need to look. I don't need to take a step. I just need to get this thing on my boot and
terrible
get it in the general.
It wasn't like he was in front of the goals. It was on the angle.
And he was the right footer. So, like you said, he's gone with the outside of the right. Very skilled player, but Matty Boyd definitely made him earn it as well.
Yeah. Port kept pushing the margin out, but the Dogs are up for it. They're up for the challenge. They brought the margin in time and time again throughout the game. Now, both of these teams, as we well know, they're both running teams, and that's where it was won. I mean, it's just what we love to see. From Port Adelaide point of view, we'd love to see your Matt White's, your Travis Boakes running through the midfield. From Bulldogs, you'd love to see Bob Murphy as soon as he just takes
as soon as he touches the ball, it's a goal.
So yeah, just great footy to watch. Seeing one person break away, then followed by the rest of the team following him. Now, it was just coming a little bit easier to Port. I thought the Dogs had to work a lot harder for their goals, whereas Port, they were sort of easily able to break the lines and convert the goals. Now, over to the second half. Now, a mistake in the Port backline, they gifted the Dogs another quick goal to Dixon before Stewart set up a goal on the other side on his first game back from injury. I thought he played really well as well, talking about players coming back from injury. Rookie Port player Cleary was in the first half... He was just copping it from fans, everything. He was making mistakes all over the ground.
The new John Butcher.
Yeah, the new Butcher, yeah, exactly. But, second half, he was pretty instrumental. He got some big marks and some big punches. Now, he let a couple go by early, obviously, but he definitely made up for them in the second half. Now, Chad Wingard and Robbie Gray, let's talk about these two players. Obviously, massive stars for Port Adelaide. Robbie Gray, they combined together for three goals in a row to Port. And they were away. Robbie hit Chad twice in a row for two goals, hit him inside 50.
Yep.
And both times, they were probably kickable goals. And I was just, I mean, Robbie Gray's in the dream team. You know, I'm just
Robbie
like,
Gray's
come
the
on,
man
kick,
trash.
Kick it, Robbie. You're in my dream team. That's 9 points you could be having. And when he dished it off to Wingard, I'm like, okay, assist. Okay, almost as good, or I'll accept it. But he hit Chad twice in a row. Chad got two goals, and then Chad, I thought he thought he had to give one back to Robbie, so he hit Robbie in the 450, and Robbie scored one. So three goals in the row for them. Both two players, both sensational players, and the margin went from 10 points at three quarter time to 40 very quickly as the game was pretty much out of reach for the Dogs. Good effort though. I mean, they played three quarters of Dogs, so well done to them. Final score from Adelaide over Port Adelaide 16-4-100 to Western Bulldogs 9-8-62. Yeah, Bulldogs, they definitely came to play. It was a good game. They played three quarters, just couldn't get that fourth quarter. Unfortunate, but I mean, it's things to work on now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually really impressed with the Bulldogs. I thought actually for the first half, I thought the Bulldogs on the whole probably played better than Port Adelaide. I think the first four shots we had at goal, two of them were 50-50s. I think one was about 45 metres out from Jared Grant, who hit the post. And then the next kick was the other goal post. And then Lukey Dalhouse scrambled a kick from the boundary that went through for a point. So, I mean, you can't really pick on those. No. They were close, and the Dalhouse's was difficult. But again, see the Bulldogs kicking, costing them in this particular case. I mean, 9 goals, 8, 17 scoring shots to 16-4, 20. Realistically, the margin should have only been 18 points if everyone kicked straight, and I think the Bulldogs really had a chance, and we didn't do it, and I think Port Adelaide deserved absolutely to win this game. I think they've found a little bit of their mojo. Absolutely.
Good call, Rob. Now, let's talk about their running abilities, Port Adelaide, because 2014, their strongest quarter was their fourth quarter. You look at the stats and everything's kind of flat. Fourth quarter just goes through the roof. This year, it's been the total opposite. It just goes down in the fourth quarters. I mean, they won against Melbourne last week. We can't really say much about that. But this has been the first time I've seen where it's been an even game. This is the 2014 power. Even game, third quarter, fourth quarter starts, and then they just run over the top.
And they smashed the Dogs, absolutely killed them in the final quarter. I mean, like you said, in a blink of an eye almost, it seemed like the margin went from, you know, oh, this could go either way to why are we even watching this, game over. And I think even last week, Melbourne got the jump on them, and they fought back really well. So I think I don't know. It's almost like a change of the guard. Port Adelaide seem to be able to play. The longer the game goes on, I think the more comfortable they're getting.
The more comfortable they get, the more they set.
Don't underestimate the impact Ollie Wines is having on this team as well. Mm. I think it was a wrist injury. Yeah, yeah. Was it around 4 or 5? Yeah. He's been out for about a month. he's come back and he's really, really important to this team. I think he's almost Brett Deledio's importance to Richmond. Mm. He's kind of like Ollie Wines to Port Adelaide, and it's no surprise for me that he's back now and Port Adelaide are starting to find their groove a bit again. When Ryder comes back and a few of these other players come back again, you'd expect them to get even better. And just a side note, Ollie Wines, I saw him on the weekend. The only other player I've ever seen do this is Nick Maxwell when he was captain of Collingwood, but he can hold the Sharon in one hand and
very
run.
Very comfortably.
Yeah, absolutely. Usually the movement of the arm makes the ball slip out, and it was slippery conditions in Adelaide, I think it was fair to say.
He did it casually though, didn't he?
He's almost like he had the ball in his right hand, he was shrugging the tackle with his left. He's like don't worry, boys, just get on. Yeah, like LeBron, just palming a ball.
I did see that, actually. That was insane.
Quite incredible. Mm. Not something you see often, but God, doesn't it look fancy?
Oh, yeah.
Two Brownlow votes just for that.
And things like that could just get Adelaide Oval just up and about. Yeah. You know, you see that, the crowd was up.
And the irony is it doesn't actually do anything. There's there's no stat for it, there's no reward for it, but it looks cool. Mm. And that is part of AFL football, isn't it? That's why I wasn't a fan of Pritis winning the Brownlow. Not enough flair. Ollie Wines, you got the flair.
Let's talk about Port's midfield now, the big five we're going to call them. We got Robbie, we got Ollie, we got Travis Bowe, Hamish Hartlett as well, I'm going to include, and I've missed one, Chad Wingard. Now, best for me, I think Chad Wingard was just on fire.
He was on fire.
He got three goals. He got two in the last quarter when they were firing, but he was just he had the spark, Rob. The 6 point spark, let's call it that.
He had the 6 point spark.
And every time he got the ball, you just knew something was going to happen. Assists, goals, everything. He brought everything. If he can just get some consistency with that, because you know he's such an inconsistent player, he'll have games like this. Next week, he'll probably come and have like four touches or something. If he can bring that,
He's a real barometer for Port Adelaide. When he seems to be up and about, and not necessarily in terms of 20 touches or five goals or whatever, but just when he's active and he's engaged in the game, it's a real barometer for Port, and they tend to come out. And I think the rest of the team really feeds off that energy. So he's a really, really important player for Port Adelaide. So take us through this one, Sean. Just finish it up quickly for us.
Yeah, so some goals to finish this one up. Wingard, you finished with the 3. White and Schulze with the 2. Hartlett, Westhoff, Sam Gray, Wines, and Stewart all with 1. For the Western Bulldogs, Stringer, Ruffy with 2. Dale Cramery, Stevens, and Dixon all with 1.
Dream team, Sean. You don't seem quite as excited as I am for this round.
Look, I'm not. There's nothing much happening here. Look, you start us off because I may cry.
You sure you want me to start us off? All right. So, average week for the for the Shadow Dogs finished with 18.54, which all things considered, not an atrocious effort, Sean, because Mason Wood still hasn't played for North since I moved him into my team. Bontempelli was also withdrawn for this one as well. Tom Boyd, who's my emergency, got 19, so my forward line just absolutely sucked it on the weekend. Jesse Hogan only got 48, so a little bit below average for him as well. Ellis Yeoman, 46 as well. Jakey Batchelor killed me, 22, but then again, my emergency Talia got 22 as well, so I can't really complain too much about that. Huge game from Adam Oxley, 126. Brendan Goddard, in what was a dismal, dismal, dismal performance for the Essendon Bombers on the weekend, still managed to get 111. Yeah. So well done to him. Nearly put Fife back as my captain after his 150 next week. Didn't. Am I glad I didn't do that? Because Jackie Stevens got 133, doubled to 266. Dang. So I actually got, I think for the first time in my career, some value out of my captain's place.
Nice.
Which is nice. Blitzard's got 88, so not a horrendous thing there. Billy Longer, 63 in off the bench in my ruck for Paddy Ryder. So all in all, not a terrible week.
Not a terrible one.
Jordan DeGoey on the bench for Collingwood, 84, but I mean, he could have come in to replace Ellis Yeoman. Realistically, if Wood, Bontempelli, and Ellis Yeoman live up to their performances, I could crack 2K. So I'm happy with my team. I just need people to get fit now.
Well, let's talk about my team.
Let's talk about Sean.
The Walking Techs. Oh, goodness. Now, look, last 2 weeks, Adam Oxley, when we get the teams on Thursday night, Adam Oxley's been, what's it called? Yellow. So maybe emergency. He's been selected as emergency. Now, last week, I thought, okay, he's a fair chance of playing. He's a good player. I think they'll play him. So I left him in the team. They put him on as a sub, and he copped like a 20 or something, and he played like a quarter. So this week, I was like, well, it was this emergency again. So I was like, look, I'm not going to take the risk if he's going to be playing as a sub. Let's put on Jake Kelly from the Crows instead. So put Oxley on the bench. Oxley copped 126 on the bench. Jake Kelly, 18. Oh, goodness.
So what was your total for the round?
Total, 1676.
Oh, God.
Terrible. But, like, I mean, my captain was low. He only got 80, Jordan Lewis, so he got 160.
Yep.
Pendles did well, 119. Goddard, obviously, spoke about Goddard. Source Jacobs, 100, standard, pretty much Source. Swanee, 103. So there's big numbers. Robbie Gray, 91. Tech, 71.
So apart from the Adam Oxley incident, where's the letdown? But who didn't perform?
It's the back
this week?
Line. Look, Alapata Kala, I think I need to get rid of him. He's just copping 30s all around the ground.
He was playing on Tommy Boyd.
Yeah.
Which I think was a really interesting matchup because that was literally two players that can run on a straight line and not much else. So it was a really great matchup. But
he had a great assist as well in board to Jay Schultz. And I remember when he had a crack at it, whoever was called, I think it was Mike Rusciuto, just said, "What are you doing? You're the worst kick in the team. Why are you going for this?" But he hit him lace out.
I remember, I think there was a part in the game where they were looking to switch or something, and they said, "Oh yeah, no, it was the Crows had the ball on sort of the half back wing area, and they were looking long down the line, and the commentators were like, well, they've got the switch out here, but it's Alapati Kala, and they don't want to go to him, and the Bulldogs are saying, I dare you to switch to Alapati Kala." So yeah, probably not a good sign to have him in your team then.
Yeah, no. I brought Brian Lake in this week. He only copped 49, so a little bit.
Yeah, but the ball wasn't in the back line for the Hawks, was it?
Yeah, no, very true. So trades for this week, Rob, look, I think Cruz is going to come in. I loved his game last week, and I think he's going to come in.
I don't know what I'm going to do. If I trade out Paddy Ryder, bring in Matty Cruz, I've got some cash to play with. That could really bolster my back line.
Some insider info for you from Adelaide. Yep. Paddy Ryder's behind in his recovery, and he doesn't look likely until after the bye.
Well, that's fine. I've still got Billy Longer on my bench, so I've still got 60s coming in from Billy Longer, but my back line needs...
Backline's terrible.
I think both of our backlines are pretty terrible.
I've got Oxley when he's in my team. I've got Oxley and I've got Mundy as well, but still, it's just not performing.
I've got at Oxley, had a good game. Elliot Yeo, revelation, moved into the midfield for the last 3 weeks, so he's been killing it. 100 this week, so killed it. Josh Bruce, can't believe he's actually listed as a forward defender. So from St Kilda, despite playing nearly every minute of every game up forward. So he's actually in my backline, but he got 78. So. I'm not too bad, but Jakey Batchelor, mate, you need to go. I need to get something out of that position. If I can get 70 out of that position, watch out. I'm cracking 2Ks
here
every week.
Here come the shadow dogs.
Here come the shadow dogs, exactly. Anything else apart from Matty Cruiser coming in maybe this week, Sean?
If I can get rid of a big ruckman and get Cruiser in, I think I can cop the same amount of points, and that will kind of free up my cap. So I'm due for another big player. I'm thinking Hodge back in the team.
Too many Hawks.
Too many Hawks. This
Too
could be
many
true.
Hawks. Look, your captain was Jordan Lewis, and he had a down week, and that killed you.
Mm.
Don't do it, Sean. Actually, do it. Do it. I dare you. All right, of course, each and every week we finish the show with a small look ahead into the coming round. So let's get into it, Sean. Now, first week of the byes this coming week, so... Mm. I don't know. It's almost like a week off for us, really.
Yeah,
it's like half the work. It's fantastic. look, only six games this week. Six teams, obviously, off. They are Adelaide, Richmond, the Western Bulldogs, the Lions, Carlton, which is a bit unfortunate. They finally found some form.
They started.
So you probably won't bring Cruiser in quite this round, Sean. And you won't bring Hodge in either. Hawthorn with the bye this week as well. This is where Dream Team gets interesting. But so Friday night, Port Adelaide, Geelong at Adelaide Oval.
It's at Adelaide Oval. I think that big five that I just spoke about from Port, if they can fire up and they can do something, they're a big chance. Although Geelong played sensational. But
I was about to say, do you not think Geelong's, let's face it, drubbing of Essendon,
Essendon
will give them confidence?
It will give them confidence. I think there's a lot of issues in Essendon which we don't know about. And I think I've seen it in the last few weeks. And
I think Essendon is being, I think the Asada Wada crap is catching up with them, frankly. Even James Hurd looks a little bit disinterested for mine at the moment. So,
I think Port at home.
You think Port? I'm going to tip Geelong.
Geelong doesn't, I'm just thinking about when they travelled over here, when I saw that game, they just didn't travel well at all.
They didn't travel well, but they, I don't know, Stevie J hit a bit of form last week. Yeah. There's a few players there. Caddy and Guthrie, you know, really, really got into it as well. And just completely separate note, but how good is Guthrie's decision to swap jumpers with Judd a couple of weeks ago, looking now ahead of his time? Fantastic. I'm going to tip Geelong. You're tipping Port. Is that correct?
Yes.
No worries. Gold Coast v Fremantle at Metricon. Do we even need to talk about it?
Look, Fremantle will be seething from last week, won't they?
I think Ross Lyon is going to go up there. I mean, this could well be a 100-point massacre.
Yeah, look, there's a picture floating around around the internet at the moment of a Gold Coast member at the Gold Coast game on the weekend, and he's got his iPad out and he's just cracking up an episode of Seinfeld in the middle of the Gold Coast game. And look, I'm Gold Coast Sun supporters. Look, you've got a few weeks left until Gazza comes back.
Well, until any of those players come back, really. Yeah.
So look, fire up the iPad, get some Seinfeld on there, and just bloody enjoy an episode.
The footy's not worth going to. So Fremantle for both of us there.
Yes.
West Coast versus Essendon at Domain Stadium.
This is going to be another drubbing as well. I think Essendon, West Coast are up and about. They lost last week, but they're going to come back strong at Domain, and they're going to kill Essendon.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think the Eagles might well be 8-3. I wrote an article saying that they haven't played anyone good, and they lost to North Melbourne. I think that's probably on par with where they are. I didn't expect them to beat Geelong as well as they did. But look, Domain Stadium, the Eagles have been cracking at Domain. No one can stop them there at the moment, except for Richmond, apparently. So, yeah, I'm going to back the Eagles in this one as well.
Backing the Eagles in. Okay, North Melbourne, after Win the Wind last weekend, they take on Sydney. Did you see a couple of that footage of the Bulls? They had a couple of kicks, and they pretty much went up in the air and then just stopped, and they were just spinning. There was just mega wind coming, and then they just kind of dropped, and then players are marking him. And then they weren't even 15 because they went up so high, the umpire can't call anything. But yeah, very funny stuff. No, North had a good win, but yeah, Sydney too strong still for me.
Sydney at 8-2 in the moment. Mm. Probably the only team from last year's finals that look like they're going to get back there again at the moment. So Sydney for me as well.
Mm. I think they need to drop Kurt Tibbett though, just quietly.
Oh, you don't drop an $800,000 paperweight, Sean.
You keep it. Prized possession.
Yeah, exactly.
Collingwood take on GWS, probably other than the Friday night, probably the game of the round.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll agree with that. I think it'll be a really interesting game. GWS up and coming. Collingwood have been holding on in some close games. And
I reckon GWS is going to get the jump early, and it's going to be a kind of a comeback game as well, kind of like the North Collingwood game a couple of weeks ago. But I'm going to tip Collingwood for this one.
My heart, believe it or not, my heart says Collingwood. And I never thought I'd say that. But look, it can go either way. But I think at the MCG, you just have to back in Collingwood. Mm. I think they've proven they were tested against Melbourne yesterday. They stood up a week before, down by nearly 7 goals at half. Mm. They came back to beat North. I think just based on those two results alone, you have to tip Collingwood for this one. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, GWS have a couple of good games and they have a flogging. I think they're due for one.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be a close game. I think Collingwood will win this one. Final game for the round. St Kilda take on Melbourne. Probably be an all right game too.
I actually think it'll be close. I don't think it'll be particularly skillful, but I think it'll be entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah.
Why not, Sean?
It's actually a tough one.
It's a bit of dime a dozen, isn't it? I mean, I'm going to back.
Look, St Kilda's intensity, great. But Melbourne on Monday was pretty good as well against Collingwood.
I'm going to back St Kilda just because they have the better record at the moment.
All right, well, in that case, I'm going to back Melbourne.
Fair enough. And look, this is a 50-50 game. I don't think either team's really going to be, blowing out one way or the other. I think this is probably game of the round, despite it being from two really lowly ranked teams. So, interesting how the AFL works out sometimes with the bye round, Sean. So, that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is your dose of the 6 points for another week. Any big plans this weekend, Sean, or is it mostly bed rest and trying to get rid of this man flu?
Just trying to get better. Thank goodness it's the bye round.
It's come at the perfect time at the moment, doesn't it? It's like a football club, you know. The injuries are coming right to the bye round, so it works pretty well.
No, I'll be here next week, Rob. Count on that.
I certainly hope so. So yeah, I mean, look, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, like us on Facebook as again, like I said, or send us an email if you have anything you'd like to contribute to the show. And a little teaser, listeners, in the next couple of weeks, we have a third member joining the Six Points team on the mic, so make sure to keep listening for that. I'm Robert Beaver, that is Sean Suber. Go out and enjoy the footy this coming weekend, and be sure to tune in next week and we'll break it all down again. We'll see you then.
Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the Six Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.